97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, thanks for making us part of your day. We are out and about today, live here at Tim Daly Infinity. Come on by, hang out with us. Let's go. Let's have some fun.
Excited for our next conversation. Really looking forward to this conversation because, obviously, Baylor is having a fantastic season, and we really need to start to get into more of the details of the personnel and how they're putting this season together.
Well, joining us now, he's the play-by-play voice of the Baylor Bears. John Morris, kind enough to join us. John, how are you?
Hey, John.
Guys, doing great. Great to be on with you. I appreciate it. And I'm with you. I'm really looking forward to this game coming up on Saturday.
Oh, this can be a fun one for sure. And again, John joining us on the Smart Rain guest line. All right. So you and we had a chat with you preseason leading into this game. And we thought, what is going on with that rushing attack? Just a little over 2 yards a carry last season in that weird COVID season. Now this team's over 6 yards a carry. Whatever was ailing that Baylor offense, they sure got it fixed. What do you attribute it to?
Yeah, maybe I'm in a better mood now than when we talked before, right? it has been so much better, so much more productive. You know what? I'm going to give credit, a lot of credit to Jeff Grimes and Eric Mateos. How about that?
There you go.
Blast from the past for you guys, but they are here. Obviously, we're at BYU, and obviously we are pleased to have him here. Coach Grimes is our offensive coordinator, and Coach Mateos is our offensive line coach, but it's this new offense, this wide zone offense that they brought in and that you guys know so well and installed here. And it has just been, it's been night and day, really, productivity-wise for Baylor's offense. You mentioned some of the rushing numbers. We've had, I think, 500 or 600-yard rushing days already this year by individuals. We're up near the top in the Big 12, first or second in rushing offense. So it really has been a dramatic transformation of our offense. And I think those two guys and certainly the players, you know, running their plays are to get the credit for it.
Well, let's talk about those players. Smith and Ebner, it sounds a little bit like a jewelry company, but Smith and Ebner are two guys that are responsible for nearly 1,000 yards on the ground. Talk about those two running backs, their differences, and what you expect in their usage this weekend against BYU.
Well, you'll see them both, and they're you know, I want to say interchangeable, but that wouldn't be fair to either of those guys. Treston has really changed his running style. That's Treston Ebner. He is from Henderson, Texas, over in East Texas, and he was a guy that would, really bounce it to the outside. You know, first threat of contact, he would bounce it to the outside, and the coaches were really on him. You need to be more of a north and south runner. And he listened to him, and he has changed his running style. It's amazing how he has taken to the new style. So he is more of a north and south runner in this wide zone. I think it fits him really well. He can go outside if that's where the opening is. He can cut it, you know, if he needs to do that. So he is, and he's a really good special teams player as well. He'll return kicks and return punts for us. So his all-purpose yards are really, really good. The other guy is Abram Smith, and he's a converted linebacker. And, he kind of is a running back like a linebacker would run as a running back. He is just straight up the middle, you know, a bull, a lot like Algiers, what I've seen so far. And he has been very, very productive also, runs between the tackles and just bulls his way for positive yardage pretty much every time he touches the ball.
Bohannon's yet to throw an interception. What do you attribute to his play and how impressive have you been with him throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, very. This is a guy that won a quarterback battle. Three guys competed. Gary Bohannon was the clear number one, and he has really taken to that role very well. You guys will understand this. He hadn't thrown an interception yet this year, and we mentioned that once in pregame, and then we don't mention it at all during the game. And if it's still standing, we'll mention it in postgame again. But we don't want to be the ones to jinx him, you know, or anybody accuse us of jinxing him throwing his first interception. But I would attribute it to, again, going back to Coach Grimes and putting him in positions to succeed, you know, playing to his strengths. and he's got some strengths. He can throw the ball deep. He can throw the mid-range. You know, he can run the option and run it really well also. So I think the coaches have just put him in positions where he can be successful. And the numbers, you know, kind of bear that out through six games.
Well, through six games, it's been impressive what this offensive line has done to protect Bohannon, not allowing more than a sack a game. They've been very impressive. I know Oklahoma State was able to get after him a little bit and get some pressure. They had three sacks, and there were a few pressures out there. What did Oklahoma State do to get back to Bohannon?
Yeah, you know what they did? They really stacked the line, and we couldn't get them out of that. And that's what our running game was the worst that game, worse than any other game this year. They got pressure on Bohannon like he hadn't had all season, and like you said, the three sacks. So they just really stacked the box. And, you know, what do you do against that? Well, you throw to make them back off a little bit, but we couldn't complete any passes, couldn't complete even short-range passes to get them out of that. So they just stayed up there all night. And it was, you know, it was a pretty putrid offensive performance, especially in the first half. The final was 24-14, but just not the offensive numbers that Baylor has shown in every other game. So that was the loss, the one loss. And then our guys bounced back really nicely, and Bohannon threw the ball more this past week in the win over West Virginia, and that kept them from stacking the box, and it led to a really big win. So Oklahoma State, I think they learned from it, and it was a tough loss, but I think they're better having gone through that, knowing what they need to do when teams stack the box against Baylor.
So this defense gave up 29 points a game last year, and you know with Dave Aranda and his history defensively, he's not going to put up with that. Now they're averaging only 17 points a game. What is the cause of that improvement?
I think another year in Ron Roberts' system. He's the defensive coordinator, and they really didn't change much from year one to year two. And we've got 10 starters back. I can appreciate just continuity there with those guys back this year. And then the one newcomer is a transfer. He's from Salt Lake City originally, played at LSU, transferred to Baylor, Apu Ika, who's kind of a space heater in the middle of that defensive line. So just a lot of experience there. And, credit our defensive coaches for really scheming it well, and the numbers bear out how much better they are this year than last year.
So Dave Aranda with his play calling history, does he still, I mean, you have a DC, but does he give him autonomy to call a defensive play, or does that still fall on Dave Aranda?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, but he doesn't. I mean, he lets Ron Roberts call the defense. Dave is this is his first head coaching job. Last year was his first year, and this is only his second year as a head coach. But I think he, number one, he trusts Coach Roberts to do that. Number two, he's got a lot of other things going on, a lot of other people talking in his ear. So he lets him make those calls, and I don't know how hard that was for him because he's been a DC, you know, every stop up until here. Had to be a learning process for him, you know, to let go of that.
I was looking at Baylor's, and I know they've got that passing defense. I was looking at their ability to get to the quarterback, and I think Ika is your leading sacker at the defensive tackle position. But what other pressures are you seeing? Who else is very capable of getting back and stirring up the pocket?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much everybody is capable of doing that on the front line, and then the linebackers. Terrell Bernard is our All-American linebacker, and he had a sack last week of Jarrett Dagey of West Virginia. Jalen Petrie is kind of that, the jack position is what they call it. It's that hybrid linebacker safety position, and he comes, you know, on a safety blitz every once in a while also. But then Gabe Hall on the defensive front, he's had a sack or two himself. And Braden Utley is another defensive end. Garmin Randolph is one of those guys. So really, they all, I think, work sort of interchangeably. You know, if one guy gets double teamed, maybe that opens up somebody else, and he might get in there to get the sack. So there's not one guy that's going to get all those numbers. I think it's, you know, kind of a team sack and, you know, team contributions there.
So you're playing a future Big 12 opponent in BYU. What's the mood out there in terms of what's been going on over the last couple of months in terms of the Big 12 losing Texas and Oklahoma and then adding a few teams from the AAC and BYU?
Yeah, well, I'm personally excited about this matchup. You know, a preview of coming attractions with BYU, and we'll play here this year, we'll play in Provo next year, and then it's Big 12 rivalry between Baylor and BYU. So I really hate that we're losing Oklahoma and Texas. Those are some long-standing rivalries, especially Texas, you know, 100 miles down the road from us. And, you know, it's just sad that it's kind of like when A&M left. You know, it was sad, but they made their choice and they're gone. And we're starting to play them in some sports, not football. And maybe it'll be the same with Texas. But they've made their decision. And I think the Big 12 did a really good job of finding some, you know, the best schools out there available and interested in joining the Big 12. And I prefer to look forward, you know, and look at it positively that we're adding four great schools and we're going to get, you know, these new rivalries that we'll put in place now. And we'll get to travel to Provo, Utah, you know, on a regular occasion, which is great. So I think it's going to be great. I really like the way things have come out of what was a bad situation, but I think it's turned into a positive situation.
How do you feel BYU is going to be received as a university and as a football team coming into the Big 12?
I think good. I mean, I you guys know this better than I do, but a national brand there and, you know, very well recognized, very well thought of from our perspective. You know, here at Baylor, it's another faith-based school, and we can appreciate that, you know, what BYU stands for, you know, what Baylor stands for, the same type of thing. So we really appreciate that here also. So I think they'll be very well received. I think all the schools will, and I think our fans will love traveling to road games when we come out your way.
I know we're knee-deep in football right now, but tell you what, this is going to be one heck of a basketball conference, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is. And to be honest, that's one of the first things I thought of. You know, maybe the decision was made football first. A lot of these realignment decisions are. But, man, you think about the schools that are coming into our league, which has been number one or number two RPI in basketball, you know, for several years. And then the additions of BYU and Cincinnati and Houston. Houston was in the Final Four last year with us. And then UCF also. So it is going to be some kind of league. I mean, it's I think it's going to be tougher. I think it'll be tougher with these four new schools than it is right now.
So I was just looking at this. West Coast Conference rankings came out. BYU picked to finish second, as always, behind Gonzaga in West Coast Conference and then a bunch of teams that I don't even know. I want to get your thoughts. Where do you feel like BYU would fall in line this year if they were coming out with the preseason conference rankings? Where do you feel like they'd fall in line? And I want to go minus Texas and minus Oklahoma, but okay. Where do you think BYU would fall in line?
Yeah, you know, I don't know just because I don't know the team. I don't know. I mean, I know the generalities of the program, but not really the team this year. I want to say middle of the pack, but I don't know if that's fair. We're going to have, you know, there's some good teams here, good programs here in the Big 12. And I think you guys watch for this. I think we'll have the Big 12 preseason poll out today. So watch for that. Maybe BYU will be in there. Who knows?
There you go.
When they release it today. So then we'll all find out together. But I'm not dodging your question. I just don't really have a good handle on this year's team. And, you know, we'll have Kansas, we'll have Baylor, if you include Texas, we could have three top 10 teams in the Big 12 this year in the preseason poll. So that's how tough this league is in basketball, and I just think BYU is going to fit in very well.
So what are your expectations? If Baylor's going to get a win against BYU, what do they need to do coming up on Saturday?
Yeah, I got to run the ball, and that's kind of the staple of this wide zone offense. So got to be able to run the ball against a very tough defensive front, and can't make mistakes. Our guys have been really good in the takeaway category. Baylor's plus six on the year. So that has really been something in Baylor's favor. And then our defense has just got to be able to stand up to that offensive front of BYU with those big tackles and those big guys. So, kind of the basic stuff you would think in a game. I think those things have to go Baylor's way, and Gary Bohannon has to continue to run the offense, you know, as well as he has to get to 5-1 record. But we got to run the ball. I mean, that's what really stymied Baylor against Oklahoma State and led to that loss. And if you can't do that, it really kind of gums up the works of what you want to do offensively.
Well, hey, we appreciate your time, John. Great conversation, great insight. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and look forward to future conversations when these two teams face off more often in Big 12 play.
Absolutely. This may become a regular, huh?
Yeah.
I'd love for that to happen. But,
let's hope it does.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
You bet.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
John Morris, again, voice of the Baylor Bears.
Great guy. Great guy. Fun conversation. And I was asking the basketball question more as to what strength that conference has right now, not so much what he thinks of BYU's team, but where he's talking about three potential top 10 teams in Baylor, Kansas, and Texas, and you throw in a kind of a mixed bag of some of these other teams, BYU is going to be fighting their butts off. But what's crazy is I get it, Kansas is in there. It's going to be a lot of the same because it's still been the same way in the West Coast Conference. It's just you get recognizable names and recognizable games in your full conference slate instead of, well, we get Gonzaga here in the Marriott Center once a year. I want BYU fans just to start to grasp the reality of having Kansas and Texas Tech and
Houston.
Kansas State and Houston and Cincinnati, Houston.
Baylor. I mean, these are all teams that have been Final Four teams.
Iowa State,
same, yeah. I mean, these are all great teams.
They're coming to the Marriott Center.
Yeah.
Instead of, and I get it, you're going to have to get over this, Pacific. I get it. You're going to miss LMU.
And look, we all love Pepperdine. But
we all love the Toros.
And San Francisco.
You mean the Toreros, but okay.
And by the way, BYU fans.
What did you say?
The Toros.
As Toreros.
Nobody cares. By the way, BYU fans.
El Toro Viejo.
Have been.
Great restaurant in Logan, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Extremely kind and generous to the West Coast Conference. As they should be, because the West Coast Conference did take on a group of sports when everybody was in a hurry to move out of the West Coast or the Mount West Conference. They're like, what do we do? What do we do? Well, we'll take you. All right, put them over there. And then we'll figure out something moving forward. It just took a lot longer than they probably thought to get this BYU basketball program that deserves prominence and recognition back to that.
All right. So everything you said is absolutely true. And the fun part is you get to play Kansas and Texas Tech and Baylor and all these elite-level basketball teams. The downside is you have to play Texas Tech and Kansas and Baylor.
Like, don't come at me with the be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, you better giddy up. I mean, it was all fun and games. I remember the Kyle Whittingham press conference, their first year in the Pac-12, and I think their first Pac-12 game was at USC in the Coliseum. And it's like, yeah, this is awesome. I'm like, oh, that's a conference game.
Yes, Oregon's coming to Rice-Eccles Stadium, yes.
Which is great, and that place is going to be rocking, and it's going to be fun. And if you're not careful, you're going to get an ass-whooping.
Yeah, but I will tell you the Pac-12 has not lived up to what we thought it was
for
the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like it's actually been a conference that Utah has competed well in and hasn't had a perennial champion, which bugs me.
I mean, I know Mark Pope is fired up. He's excited. But at night, he's probably at 2 a.m. with his head on a pillow like, oh, boy.
Oh, those 21 seasons are going to be a lot.
Wait a minute. So we're not playing a home-and-home with San Francisco and Pepperdine anymore.
Because what was Dave Rose most well known for? Well, he's had so many 21 seasons. He'd racked up so many.
Yeah.
Those are going to be much more difficult.
Hey, a 17-win season in the Big 12 is going to be a heck of a year and may even get you in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
In terms of a 24-win. Yeah, a 24-win season in the West Coast Conference gets you an 11 seed at best. So there's a little bit more room for error in the Big 12, but.
I'm just looking at the. So last year, Big 12, Iowa State was 2-22. Let me make sure I'm looking at this right.
Iowa State was that bad last year?
Yeah.
2-22.
They've really fallen off.
Kansas State was 9-20. TCU was 12-14. Oklahoma was 16-11. Texas Tech was 18-11. West Virginia 19-10. Texas 19-8. Oklahoma State 21-9. Kansas 21-9. And then you had Baylor that was Baylor.
Yeah. All right, 11:25, Hans and Scotty. We're live here at Tim Daly Infinity. We'd love for you to come by and hang out with us. Beautiful rides, price to move, 0% up to 60 months on all these new Infinities. So let's go. Let's have some fun. Come by, hang out with us right here on the Zone Sports Network.
It's game week for the Cougars. And the Zone Sports Network is getting you ready for kickoff.
It ain't over till it's over.
It's a trip to the Lone Star State for the Cougars as BYU heads to Waco for a massive showdown against Baylor as the Cougars look to knock off a future Big 12 opponent. Catch the Cougar pregame show Saturday at 12:30 with a postgame show immediately following the game. From Monday morning to the postgame press conference, nobody brings you better coverage of Cougar football than 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It is time for your Cougars at 30 update right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network as the BYU football team heading to the Lone Star State to take on Baylor. Ituiaki, defensive coordinator, knows this BYU team has got to do better in creating some turnover opportunities.
We've got to be opportunistic and opportunities that come our way with making tackles and first guy holding them up and stripping at the ball. And, you know, I think that the way that they teach their quarterback, he's well coached. He gets rid of the ball. He's not a guy that holds on to it for a long time. He's got a really, really good timing and their scheme is good. It's hard to defend. And so we just got to keep coaching it and keep getting after it. And when we have those opportunities, we got to capitalize.
This update brought to you by the Utah Snowmobile Show. Come see the latest sleds, trailers, and gear Friday and Saturday, October 15th and 16th at the Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy. That is the Utah Snowmobile Show. Hans and I will be there live tomorrow from 10 to 2 right here on the Zone Sports Network.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. The good, as Hans mentioned in our previous segment, BYU, shocker, picked to finish second in the West Coast Conference.
Oh, behind who?
That would be Pepperdine.
Oh, man. I knew they were loaded this year. I just had no idea.
No, shocker. It is Gonzaga is your number one team.
Yeah, because they've now gotten into the one-and-done race.
Yes.
Which, that's the next step for a program, isn't it? It's like, all right, well, we've just taken the leap into the one-and-done realm.
Worked out well for them last year in a national championship game. Just couldn't get over the hump as Baylor took it to them. And so with that, Gonzaga is expected to reload, be just fine, and be your number one team in the West Coast Conference.
Well, I expect BYU to be really good. That's what I expect. You got Averett back. Barcelo's back. You got Gideon George back. You've got Caleb Lohner. And I think Caleb Lohner is going to be a real issue for the West Coast Conference this year. I hope he's an issue for Gonzaga, but I'm not going to hold my breath because we just know how this plays out.
And somebody, by the way, Gonzaga, not a unanimous first-place team. Somebody did give BYU a first-place vote.
These are the coaches that vote on this. Coaches cannot vote for their own team. So Mark,
oh, yeah, that's right.
BYU.
So, yeah, no, good job clarifying that. There's right. You can't vote for yourself. So Mark Few essentially voted BYU number one. Stop it.
Our Idaho boys back on the team, Scotty, Connor Harding, and Colby Lee representing the great state of Idaho. So the roster is loaded with solid talent. It's got speed. It's got size. It's got shooting. And, you know, BYU put a lot of faith into a Mark Pope extension. Mark Pope got an extension we haven't seen Kalani Sitake get.
Nope.
That length and how quick it came, it was really impressive. The belief that the front office has in Mark Pope's ability to coach this team. So, at the very least, I expect them to finish second in this conference. And I expect them to truly compete. I just can't, in good conscience, I can't say, well, I expect them to find a way to win this conference within the next 2 years before they exit for the Big 12. I'm not there yet because of what Gonzaga is, but I don't expect this team to have those slip-up losses that we've seen for years.
Well, that's the thing that BYU has really struggled with. It's not just about beating Gonzaga, and they've had some success against Gonzaga in the regular season. Obviously, the incredible game a couple of years ago in the Marriott Center, and the year that they gave Gonzaga their only loss in the final game of the regular season about 3 or 4 years ago. So there's been some teams that have had some success against Gonzaga in the regular season. It just hasn't translated over into the tournament. And then also, you're right, you can't have that weird February loss to LMU where you're like, what was that? What happened there? No.
What, were you sleeping?
Yeah, and that just, it wrecks your RPI or whatever the numbers are they're using now. It's just like, no, stop it.
But this is a tournament team, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is a tournament team.
I don't mean to go Lloyd and his Raiders on this one, but if they're not a tournament team, it's a disappointment. With Barcelo coming back and Caleb Lohner, another year of development, which, by the way, those two are on the West Coast Conference first team.
Well,
all West Coast Conference team.
The two guys, and I know that Lohner has already taken a huge step, but the two guys I expect to take a big step is George and Lohner. Those are the two guys I'm looking at. Like,
yeah,
there's so much growth potential for both of them to become such better basketball players, and I think they will.
Yeah,
I think that Mark Pope's the right guy. I think that their development staff is the right staff. And I think we could see a really good basketball team this year. I think we should. We need to see it.
Hey, by the way, also on the good, I had somebody tweet in if we were going to give him any love today. Our guy, Sam Merrill, do you see what he did last night?
I did.
30 points.
I did. Unbelievable. I saw some people that were questioning his ability to stick. But remember, he was a part of a trade, and there was some –
They could have just cut him and not guarantee the final year and a half of his contract. He only had half of this upcoming season guaranteed, and they picked it up. So not only does he gets fully guaranteed this year, and I believe next year too. So yeah, that was a big move, and he put on a show last night. 30 points, 11 of 17 from the field, 8 of 13 from three.
What a kid. Love seeing him do good things. Hope he can stick in the league, make a lot of money.
There you go.
And give a ton of it back to his old university. Make the Sam Merrill Practice Center.
I think that if
the Sam Merrill broadcast booth and build something out for you.
See, now we're talking.
Now Scotty's really in on
now
this.
Now we're
hold on.
Attention.
Now we really want him to be successful.
Yeah. Because right now there's not a broadcast booth.
Yeah.
In that, you know what? It's a table.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I actually think that maybe the Sam Merrill like spectrum, like let's they need a new arena up there. Sammy, you go out there, make a ton of money. Maybe you foot the bill for that.
Just get a couple more years under your belt.
It'd be interesting to see. I think they were close to getting something done before COVID hit, and that obviously derailed some things. But they want to build a new arena up there.
A full new arena.
Yeah.
Not renovations.
There's a lot of cost analysis on whether they should renovate or build a new one.
Huh.
And so there's been a lot of talks up there, but that place is so iconic in terms of just how loud and intimidating that place can be. You'd hate to lose that when you build something new, and sometimes that happens when you get this shiny new building and you kind of lose a little bit of that home court advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So you hope that doesn't go away if they do decide to do something. All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
We talked about the story going back probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago, but Brett Favre is now ordered to return $828,000 that he received from welfare funds those funds, Scotty, as we reported on, were supposed to go to families in need. Remember, the funds came from the $1.1 million in funds came from two nonprofit organizations. And those owners of those nonprofit organizations have been indicted on federal and state charges. So they're in a lot of trouble. Favre is not in legal trouble. He's just fiscally responsible for the return of this money. And I don't know why he has drug his feet and let this become a story and let it become litigation to the point now where he's got 30 days to return the $828,000 before he faces a civil lawsuit. Why would you even let yourself get to this point?
Just cut a check, man. I mean, you made over $100 million in your career. Go return the money.
You didn't even show up for the speaking engagement that you got paid the $1.1 million for. You didn't even show up. You didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So he's already paid a little bit of it back, which shows you guilt. That's why it's only $828,000 now instead of the $1.1 million that originally. I just wonder if they were like, well, here's $300,000. I think we could all be happy with that, right? And they're like,
no.
What are you talking about? It was illegal. You didn't even speak. Give us the money back so we can get it to the people it was supposed to go to.
Go cut another dopey Wrangler commercial or whatever you need to do. Go and then, you know, just hand the money over. Come on. Don't be a miser about it. Let's go.
It blows me away that he's let this thing drag on to this point. That now you've got an embarrassing lawsuit that you're staring at. Just pay the money.
And so, Scotty, there's your bad. By the way, good, the bad, the ugly, brought to you by Zero Res. Get those carpets cleaned right now. Winter is coming. You got holiday parties coming up. You want those carpets looking their best. Now's the time to get them done. 801-288-9376. That's 801-288-9376. Finally, let's get to the ugly.
And, of course, the ugly.
Some reporting coming out of the BYU Daily Universe, the newspaper down there. So let's say you wake up one day and you hop on Twitter and you want to fire off a new poll or whatever the case is, because polls are fun. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you get a message saying you don't own this Twitter account anymore. It has been taken away from you. You have been hacked. And if you want your Twitter account back, you're going to have to pay some money.
Ugh.
Well, that has happened to the BYU Cougarette Instagram account.
Oh, man.
It has been hacked and taken over. The description reads, this Instagram account is held to be sold back to its owner. The Daily Universe reached out to the current owner, and they say that they have held it for 14 days and are asking for $1,000 for its return.
Oh, man. That is such a shame. I was looking at that Instagram account this morning, Scotty. I believe that it has like 75,000 followers. Or 79,000?
79,300.
79,000 followers. That's not something that you just rebuild in a day.
Yeah, this is the account that like Cosmos, all those dancing videos that gone viral, has come from. So it's got a big old following.
79. Yeah, you can't rebuild something like that. You can't just cancel it and start something new. That's a lot of followers. That's a lot of tradition on that Instagram account. That's worth a lot of money to them.
The hacker said no one from BYU has contacted them yet to retrieve the account. They say there is no particular reason they targeted the Cougarettes. It's just, quote, their job to hack an account and sell it back to its owner. Obviously, these guys are offshore because, I mean, what they're doing is essentially theft. So they're like,
an extortion.
I like how they tell a news story. Yeah, no, that's what
they're
we do,
ransoming,
man. We just essentially steal your account, and if you want it back, then you'll have to pay us for it.
That is so dirty. So they're out there just guessing passwords and opening up accounts? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know how they get the password.
I got to change my 1234-4321.
That's more secure than 12345, so good job.
Yeah, barely.
72727272.
I'm going to start guessing Hans' password now.
Hey, both you guys, back off.
All right, there you go. Good, the bad, the ugly. Again, brought to you by Zero Res right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Coming up next, another edition of Whole World News. And then the man himself, Frank Dolce, will be here and we'll chat some Utah football with Frank.
Do you think he'll come today?
I think we're probably, it's a 50-50 shot.
Do you think when he's here, he'll actually be here?
Like, you're wondering where his care factor is going to be?
Yeah.
I don't know. Can't really hear from him. Hands of Scotty. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Lincoln Kennedy, Raider radio analyst.
I'm honestly still trying to process what I found out in the last 48 hours. Yesterday, the rest of the emails that were shared were between Bruce Allen and John Gruden, it's been a little overwhelming. I worked for both of these guys. Bruce Allen was the team president when I was playing at the Raiders, and John Gruden was a coach. Never once did I see an inkling of the information that I got from the emails or heard about over the last couple of days. So this is all surprising to me. In this day and climate, you can't have that. You can't tolerate that. So was really surprised last night when the news came down from Mark Davis and the Raiders that they're letting him go, but at the same point, understanding why they had to let him go.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Time for another edition of Whole World News brought to you by EliteWorks. Hey, if your website stinks, that means people probably think your business stinks. You don't want that. Costing you business. Go to EliteWorks.com. They will rebuild your website for free.
Or you can call them 844-523-2777. That's 844-523-2777. And Scotty, I didn't have a chance to talk about something in the world of sports that I wanted to talk to you a little bit about. And so Whole World News has a lot to do with the Los Angeles Lakers and Westbrook. Have you seen his preseason numbers?
No.
So Westbrook through three games was 3 of 9 with 5 turnovers, 3 of 12 with 9 turnovers, and 1 of 7 with 6 turnovers. In his first two games, he shot 4 of 19 with 16 turnovers. With 16 turnovers. And then in his debut, where the big three were on the court together, they ended up losing to Golden State 111-99. So LA is now 0-5 in the preseason. And Westbrook in his first game, back with the big three, was that 1 of 7 with 6 turnovers. It is not the best look. We know that it's preseason. He probably doesn't care.
I don't think he does, no.
But
I would love for those numbers to be as average for the first month of the season.
But 21 turnovers through three games, even if it isn't a preseason game, is just a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh, man, how great would that be if that's how he starts the season?
Okay, this was the question I wanted to pose to you. How quickly does LeBron James turn on Westbrook?
It'll be pretty quick if that's how he plays. It's not going to be pretty.
If his percentages are down and he's sloppy with the ball, and I could just see LeBron being fed up with it and turn on him really quick. And I could see this team just feast off each other. And I'm talking in a negative way. I do not believe that this is the golden roster that people think it is. I am a big fan of Anthony Davis. I am not a big fan of him being able to play more than 50 games this year. But I know they just want to get to the postseason. But they'll probably – my guess is they're still in a play-in situation. They're still in that 7.
I'm going to say they avoid the play-in. They'll finish 8, 5, or 6.
Do you? Just above it?
Let's put this on the over-under next week.
Okay, I will. I'll drop that in. Or you can drop it in. Jazz over-under is coming up next Tuesday. So tune in.
Season's coming, folks.
Yes, it is.
Can't wait. All right, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. That's your Whole World News right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hey, there was a I actually thought you were going to bring this up, but I read this story the other day. There was a deer that had been chipped. And they were tracking, find out migration patterns and stuff like that. So they chipped this deer, and he'd been showing up, and they had these cameras and webcams around various various migration patterns, so they could figure out what was going on with him, and they were seeing video of him. And for the last 2 years, he'd gotten his head stuck on a tire, and so there was a tire around his neck that he'd been carrying around for 2 years. And they kept trying to find a way to get him to get it off of him, but they couldn't ever get him. Uh-huh. And so this poor deer for the last 2 years has been had this Michelin tire around his neck. They finally were able to snag him. But the problem was there was a lot of metal inside the tire, so they just couldn't just cut it. So they ended up cutting off his antlers to get his...
Jeez, I thought you were going to say his head.
Well, I mean, that would... If that's the case, then just... He just drop him from 300 yards and call it good.
They had to take his antlers off?
Had to cut off his antlers. Oh, I don't know if that dude's like, hey, look, I got used to this thing.
I was doing fine, man. Check out my shoulders.
I'm good.
Kind of looking bullish around here. Delaney's kind of liked it. The only one that was trying a little bit with this necktie. They chopped off his antlers. So you take off a 50-pound tire and 120 pounds worth of antlers, and now that elk is probably running around like he's...
It was an elk, wasn't it?
It was.
It was an elk,
He's
yeah.
probably running around like he's young and spry. That's a lot of weight to take off an elk.
After all the years of lifting weights with those antlers and that tire. But then also he's running around and all the ladies are like, what happened to you?
Yeah, look at you.
Look at you.
You used to be dressed well and... Used to have so much up top.
And now nothing.
Now look at you. Run away.
All right, coming up next, it's your Ute Preview Show. Frank Dolce joins the program. Utes get the win against USC. Does that level of play translate over to Arizona State? Frank will tell you if that'll happen next right here on the Zone Sports Network.